This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work offers a one-year advanced standing option for students with a bachelor's degree in social work that builds on prior training and connects students with expert faculty and five specialized pathways. Apply by February 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future. WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. It's the beginning of July, which means that new laws are going into effect across the state, including here in Chicago. We're talking about everything from an increase in the minimum wage to a new program offering driver's licenses to undocumented immigrants to paid leave. So I sat down with WBEZ's city government and politics reporters, Tessa Weinberg and Mariah Wolfel. I started off by asking about changes to minimum wage, which went up for all workers, including people who usually rely on tips. Here's Tessa.
Yeah, so part of the increase that went into effect yesterday is that tipped workers, like restaurant servers, they've basically been paid a lower base minimum wage. And so the expectation is that tips would make up that difference. And if tips don't, that their employer is supposed to cover that. But many advocates, you know, and workers themselves have long said, you know, employers don't always do that. And that, you know, employees could be hard pressed to complain about, you know, when those rules aren't being followed over fear of losing their jobs or just, you know, being taken advantage of. And so the city council last year passed legislation that's going to phase out that subminimum wage over the course of 5 years. And so the first 8% increase went into effect yesterday. And so workers who earn tips will now see their base pay rise from, it was around $9.50 an hour to now roughly $11 an hour. Mm-hmm. And then Chicago's minimum wage, it increases each year. And now it is increasing to $16.20 an hour. And so the goal is after, you know, on year five, eventually there will be no discrepancy between tipped workers and minimum wage workers, and that all workers will be earning that minimum wage.
And advocates were really pushing for this, right, Tessa?
Yeah, they had really been pushing for this. You know, Chicago is joining, this growing trend. At the time that city council passed this, there had been eight states that were already mandating that, you know, this tipped employees receive the full minimum wage and then also on top of that, get their tips. Washington, D.C. was another big city that recently did this. Mm-hmm. And they were really pushing for, you know, the minimum wage pay to be the standardized across the board to cut down on financial abuse that many workers have been subjected to.
What are opponents saying, Mariah?
Sure. Well, restaurant associations who oppose this kind of pointed to the law that Tessa alluded to that ensures already this kind of sort of base minimum wage for tipped workers. And they say that, you know, Chicago's ordinance will end up actually reducing earnings for tipped workers. They argue that people will tip less. And, you know, some tipped workers who are split on this have said this themselves, that, you can really make a career out of restaurant work based on tips. The National Restaurant Association told the Sun-Times, they pointed to Washington, D.C. also, which apparently lost nearly 2,000 restaurant workers in the year after their tipped wage increase. So they are also concerned about a worker shortage. At the end of the day, though, I think, you know, this affects the bottom line of restaurants. Paying your employees an 8% increase for the next 5 years is not an easy or cheap thing to do.
Sure. Yeah, we definitely heard this on the program before. We've had much discussion. Earlier in the year, we talked with Mario Ponce, who owns the Taquito restaurants, and he's against increasing the minimum wage for tipped workers. I want to play a little bit of what he had to say.
We can't afford it. And the only way we can afford it is by, unfortunately, finding ways to do work, potentially, without servers.
So saying much of what you just alluded to there, Mariah, but what else have we heard from the workers as well as diners?
Well, workers who support this measure say that this will give them some stability. You know, you think about the times like the COVID-19 pandemic, where like people whose livelihood were dependent on patrons coming in and tipping them. So in dips like that, where there are fewer patrons coming into restaurants for whatever reason, this will provide some stability. Also, workers who support this say that, you know, it will help reduce inequities in tipping, where people of color and women are often tipped less than their male counterparts or white counterparts. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's from restaurant workers who support it. And I think we kind of covered the restaurant workers who would oppose this and say that I can actually make a living, a good living, especially in higher end restaurants off of tips, and are worried that this, you know, elimination of the sub minimum wage will stop people from tipping as much. There are others who say, I think people are still going to tip 20%. It's so ingrained in our society that might take years and years and years to kind of root out, but it remains to be seen.
Yeah, so more detail here. So as of July 1st, the minimum wage in Chicago for tipped workers is $11.02. For non-tipped workers, it's $16.20 an hour, which applies to businesses which have four or more employees. Now, elsewhere in Cook County, it's $14.05 an hour with no increase for tipped employees, and statewide, it's $14 an hour. Tessa, this was considered a big win for the Johnson administration. What have you heard from the mayor and his team about how they're planning on just making sure that things roll out smoothly here?
Yeah, they've been doing, you know, a lot of announcements leading up to this, you know, increase going into effect. There's also a new Office of Labor Standards that is specifically, you know, dedicated to resolving some of these issues. You know, advocacy groups like Arise Chicago are really encouraging workers themselves to also kind of be policing their own employers and ensuring, you know, make sure you check your check, ensure that these increases are going to affect. And if not, be reaching out to, you know, the city's Office of Labor Standards or groups like that to, you know, ensure that, you know, these rules, these new increases are being followed. And so
especially by those business owners that we just talked about that don't support this effort.
Mm-hmm, yeah, it's definitely an adjustment. So I'm sure, you know, we'll see some, you know, starts and stops as people get used to these new increases going to effect.
Mariah, another benefit to workers went into effect this week, and that's 10 days of paid leave. Give us details.
Yeah, we're really talking about some of the main priorities for Johnson, who came into office and really, you know, said that these are value statements. Mm-hmm. And this,
I feel like I've been hearing this since day one. Yeah. Paid leave.
This gives 5 days of sick leave and 5 vacation days to Chicago employees, which is double the amount of time allotted in the state's new paid leave policy, which requires 5 days of paid leave. So it's very generous. It's one of the most generous in the nation. This includes Chicago employees who work in Chicago. It also includes employees who work 80 hours or more in a 4-month period in the city. So that would help cover people who come and work a convention, for instance, and work 2 40-hour weeks or, you know, 80 hours within a time period. Businesses were given 6 months to kind of get to this implementation period of July 1st.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. Inspire change. Shape the future. WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
Another new law of note, Tessa, driver's licenses. Undocumented residents who pass a driving test will now be able to get official state driver's licenses. So previously, the ID cards had a purple bar with TVDL at the top, which some say that led to stigma. How so?
Yeah, so if you look at these, you know, previous driver's licenses that had that purple bar, you know, it said not valid for identification, had that big purple bar on top. And now folks can get the, you know, just typical looking standard driver's license, says driver's license, but there'll be, you know, a phrase underneath that says federal limits apply. And that was something where the Secretary of State at a recent news conference, when he's describing these new IDs, that that purple bar that made clear that this was, you know, perhaps an undocumented resident who had this license was just, you know, he described it as kind of a scarlet letter that was instantly, you know, maybe singling someone out and their immigration status, that that could be, you know, ripe for them to experience discrimination. And this is trying to, you know, help curb that. And the Secretary of State's office said that there were more than 300,000 people in Illinois that have this temporary visitor's driver's license in the state. And the new four-year license, it will still say federal limits apply, so it's clear.
But this allows them to do more, right?
We
use our license for so much.
Yeah, definitely. It's a necessary form of official documentation. You know, this won't be a real ID that folks can get. But I think it's something we also saw even at the city level. There was a surge in demand for the city clerks, city key municipal ID from migrants when they came to city, because they needed that official form of documentation. So you can, you know, apply for an apartment or open a bank account and have that official form of ID on you.
Now, Mariah, after the Pride Parade this past weekend, we saw mass arrests early Monday morning. We're still gathering details. We're getting lots of different stories here from both parade goers as well as police. But stories were shared on Twitter that some people felt that they couldn't figure out how to leave because their path to the red line stop was blocked. We're looking ahead to protests, of course, at the DNC coming up in just, what, a month. And so we're hearing similar concerns from back in 2020. Bridges were raised and protesters couldn't leave those protests. Of course, when we talk about Pride, that was a celebration, not a protest. But do we know how CPD is actually planning to disperse protesters when it's time to leave in August?
Yeah, so this is a major point of contention. Yeah. Police have been working with the Federal Consent Decree Coalition, which is a group of community organizations that have been weighing in on the court-ordered reforms that CPD is required to make in the consent decree. And so they've been collaborating with CPD on a mass arrest policy for the DNC. And, you know, initially they said that an initial draft of CPD's policy would eviscerate First Amendment rights. They had serious concerns about this policy. CPD went back and made some tweaks most recently. And I'm drawing on, awesome reporting from the Sun-Times' Tom Shuba, who's been following this issue. But recently the coalition acknowledge that the latest draft of the policy from CPD does have some improvements, including a change that bans CPD from using the controversial containment policy known as kettling, where, you know, you use dispersal tactics to disperse the crowd, to shrink it, and then to really move the crowd into an area where they cannot leave, so that you're able to arrest, you know, 20, 30 dozens of protesters at the same time, because when there's 400 people, you can't really do that. And so that would ban CPD from using that controversial tactic, which can cause a lot of anxiety for people. I mean, you're trapped, causes a lot of anxiety, and really can escalate the situation. It would also ban officers from arresting protesters for small offenses unless they pose a public safety threat. But you know, there are still a lot of serious concerns with this policy, including that it doesn't distinguish between things like illegal protests in the form of civil disobedience versus illegal acts such as looting or rioting. And those are two things that I think that people working on this are really concerned about, a differentiation between, as we look to the DNC. Also, it doesn't, according to this coalition, adequately ban CPD from using pepper spray on protesters as well. And so there are some still things to consider, to be worked out.
Yeah, and all this talk of the DNC so far assumes that the main action is happening outside the streets. But after we saw President Biden's debate performance last week, there are rumblings of Democrats choosing a different nominee, which then puts that action solidly inside the United Center. What have you been hearing, Tessa, from local delegates, and whether the support is wavering at all for President Biden?
Yeah, you know, there was just news that broke a little bit ago that a Texas congressman was calling on Biden to, you know, step aside. But so far in Illinois, in the Chicago area, from the handful of delegates I've talked to since last week, they've really been standing by Biden. And they've been saying you cannot compare, Trump versus Biden in just a 90-minute debate that you need to look at their records. And, you know, one suburban delegate I talked to yesterday was stressing that the stakes are too high, that they felt, you know, this is who we have. Time for constructive criticism can come after Biden's reelected, and that right now they just need to focus on reelecting him.
Yeah.
And so that's really been the sentiment so far, kind of an unwavering support. One delegate said, you know, people need to calm down and, you know, take a breath.
Take a breath. All right. Well, let's take a breath here. Tessa Weinberg and Mariah Wolfel are WBEZ's city government and politics reporters. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic, mixed by Max Lubers, and edited by Meha Ahmed. If you want to catch more episodes about Chicago politics, plus all the news you need to know, subscribe to our podcast. You can also listen to our full archive of conversations at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again this afternoon.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.